Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, you should know by now, to better cricket. Whoever you are, wherever you are, we're here to help you out. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here and helping me to help you. Today, it's just one very fine cricket coach. It's Mark Garraway. He is the director of cricket at Millfield School. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Yeah, very good. Very good. It's gone a bit chilly the last couple of days, though. Oh, crikey. I mean, it must be Baltic where you are. But fielding today, we haven't got any games today, but yeah. Fielding today would not be fun. Even though it's clear blue skies overhead, it is proper chilly. So I'm hoping for a bit of warmth over the next couple of days because there's a lot of games coming up.
Our wicketkeeper this year is an Australian. He is an import and he's come from Queensland. And on Sunday's match, after Sunday's match, he came up to me and he said, this sounds like a very strange question, but is there any way to warm your hands up before you put the gloves on? Because I couldn't feel my hands about five overs in and I didn't know whether I was catching the ball or not anymore. So he's struggling a little bit with the 25 degree drop in temperature, definitely.
I don't blame him, mate. It's not been fun for even 5 degrees since the weekend. For me, it's not been fun, let alone that significant change.
He'll adapt. He's a sensible lad. Hello, Nick. I know you're listening. Right, let's do some questions. Questions that have been sent in by listeners to this very show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website over at pitchvision.com. And how it works is we do our best to answer a couple of questions every week, and then we pick the best question of the week that wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us for future shows by emailing coach@pitchvision.com or getting in touch with us via social media, which we'll tell you more about towards the end of the show. The first person who's done it this week is Yasif. And Yasif says, could you please recommend me some isometric exercises that increase fast twitch muscle fibres? I need to include some for a pre-season workout plan. It almost sounds like he's got an exam question.
Yeah, it does sound that way. Well, I'll be brutally honest with you. I'm not an expert in these things at all. And this is where we need Lavers. Where is Lavers?
He's away. I don't know where he is. We've lost him.
Unbelievable.
Down the back of the sofa.
Unbelievable. Have you got any idea on this?
Well, we were talking about it the other week, actually. Isometric in terms of not contracting without moving the muscles. You know what I mean? Like, so the idea that we were talking about last week with Steph Jones is getting bowlers into fixed positions and holding it there with resistance as long as possible. That is... That's the basic idea of isometric exercises. And they went out of fashion quite a long time ago, actually, probably, you know, in the 80s, maybe. You know, they were sort of seen as this sort of silly thing that's not as good as other ways of training.
Yeah.
But very recently, they have come back in to help almost with the technical side of certainly bowling. And that way... it doesn't necessarily help with improving the number of fast twitch muscle fibers that you have, which is, you know, the ones that have to contract very quickly in order for you to do something quickly. And those muscle fibers, they do engage when you start that isometric contraction. They have to, because they don't, they engage always. But then after that, the slow twitch ones comes in, so you hold that position. So it's not a direct one-to-one. But of course, the more you can get into good positions, which an isometric drill will help you do, the faster you'll be able to bowl, because, you know, you'll get less of those energy leaks when you're actually moving rather than just holding those positions. So if we want to answer the actual question itself, then we need to say, well, not really. I mean, it's sort of, but not really. But actually what we need to ask is why do you want to do that? Why do you want more fast twitch muscle fibers, and why do you want to use isometric exercises? And I think what reading between the lines there a little bit, I think the answer to that is I want to bowl faster. I reckon that would be my guess.
That was my read on it as well. But it could, you know, it could be I want to hit the ball harder. It could be I want to throw the ball harder. It could be a number of things. And I suppose the most well-known isometric exercises are things like, you know, side planks and planks. And we know that those can do, can recruit, you know, our core muscles, our core stability. And we understand that the journey from, in particular with throwing and with stepping into a shot when we're trying to hit it hard, and with bowling, that we're trying to take that energy that we put into the ground and take up back into our legs, and up into basically our hands, aren't we, to make the ball bowl fast, throw fast, and make the hands go quick through the ball, to make the ball, the fingers spin rapidly, and put revolutions on the ball. And the thing that takes that energy from the bottom half of your body and then transfers it and multiplies it up through our smaller muscle chains and joints is the torso, you know. So the better we are in those core areas by doing things like planks and side planks and different types of holds which help us to develop that stability, the better we are at transferring from bottom to top, the more efficient we are at doing that. And as a consequence, our hand speed, which is so important in the game of cricket, whether it be chucking a ball fast because our hand needs to go fast for the ball to go out of it quickly, similarly our hands need to go fast for the ball to go off the bat quickly, our hands need to go fast to chuck the ball and bowl it fast, and also to spin the ball, we need to have a lot of velocity in our hands, a lot of speed in our hands to get our fingers going in the right way at enough revs per minute to make the ball go off the deck and do something pretty special. So the middle part of our body, isometrically, we can do a lot of work in planks. And interestingly, I mean, there's two schools of thought around holding this for a long period of time, and then maybe being quite specific around how we actually use it in a functional way when we're playing a game of cricket. So a fast bowler, whilst it's advantageous to be able to hold a plank for 180 seconds, we'll probably find that he started to recruit different muscle groups other than his core to make that happen. So a lot of the stuff that we do here are around 5 and 10 second holds and really being tight and really being able to hold that isometric position for that time, because when we're in the delivery stride and letting go of the ball, it's very short periods of stability that we're looking for, aren't we, at that key time where we've got all those forces going through the body.
After about 10 seconds of holding any kind of isometric exercise, a plank, great example of that, the blood flow stops going to the muscle because, you know, the muscles is contracted and the body realizes it doesn't need to send blood there anymore. So that's when you'll start training something different after about 5 or 10 seconds. So if you want to train that, and if that's part of the program, great, you know, and it is a good sort of general test of core strength to see how long you can hold a plank for. I was at the a rep coaching session during the winter when the coach joined in with the fitness testing, and he was delighted to be the one who held the plank for longer than any of the 15-year-olds. So he was absolutely delighted with that. And that is a good general test of fitness. But yeah, what you want to do is transfer that ability over into the skill that you're trying to execute, and there'll always be a loss from the basic exercise into the skill, because they're not the same, but it's how much you lose. And if you have those holds for shorter periods of time, like you said, Gareth, that will be a better transfer over into the skill that you ultimately want to improve in. Rather than just getting good at doing planks, which is fine if you want to break the world plank record, but it's not, you know, you want to have a maximum transfer. So
it's certainly something that our S&C guys have really pushed over the last year, I think, through some research that they've been involved with, and it's been a massive part of our program for our fast bowlers. But we've actually taken that across into all of our disciplines, because, you know, the ability to move, even keeping wicket, you know, if a ball spits off a length and bounces off a leg spinner to a wicket keeper, they've got to be able to use their core to transfer move and get those hands up as quickly as possible. So I think it's a pretty good thing to do, and it's certainly something that we're doing a lot of. Even I do it, and I actually am a lot happier having 10 second holds on my plank than 180, I'll be honest. Yeah.
Yep. So years ago, what's his name? Oh, Vern Gambetta, who's famous American athletic development coach. He said, "You don't want to think about core as a static thing. What core is really is the ability to stabilize the center of your body while your limbs are moving." And I thought, what a great way to sort of put a bit more on it than just saying, "Oh, hold a plank for a bit longer." Because that's what you do when you bowl, when you throw, when you try and hit the ball with a cricket bat. The core is stable, but the limbs are moving. So, that's really when you talk about athleticism, that's one of the things that you see. People with a strong core, even though their body is flying all over the place.
I love that. I think that's one of the best things I've heard for a while. Actually, I'm going to go as far as saying that, David.
Fantastic. Awesome. Well, it's not mine.
Yeah, but, no, I wasn't going to let you take credit for it, but anyway.
Next question is from Utkarsh. And Utkarsh says, "I often feel that I'm doing well in nets, but when it comes to competitive matches, I feel that I'm not able to give my 100%. I'm performing in nets, but I'm not able to show my real potential in matches. Can you guide me with reasons and drills to fix this?"
Not so much drills, I don't think. To me, this is a mindset. We see it a lot. Having coached for far too long now, I would suggest that there are many more players that suffer from this particular thing than probably I was one of them, to be honest. If I think back, although I wasn't that great a net player, I was probably a better net player than I was out in the middle at the top level anyway. It's having the ability to just understand that net session is a dress rehearsal for what you do when you go out to the middle. And we often talk about approaching nets really well, so then that can impact on your performance. It sounds like you're approaching nets really well and getting your dress rehearsal really well, but then not trusting the work that's gone on in those nets to allow the same thing to happen when you go out into the middle. So every time you have a good net and you're approaching it really well by the sound of things, make sure that you recognise that you've done exactly that, and make sure that you make the connection between what that good preparation gives you when in terms of confidence and the ability to express yourself when you go out to the middle. And so you can carry that into the game. But you're in quite a big group there. I think for every good net player, there's probably a quarter of a good game player in there, and I think this affects a lot of people. But the people that do their dress rehearsal well and then trust it are the ones that tend to do best in gameplay or on the stage or in the if they're in a band or whatever. You've got to trust your preparation, and if you do that, you give yourself a chance of going out there and performing well and just letting it all go, really. But equally, not getting too het up when you don't. And I keep going back to the fact that as a batter, if you score a match influencing innings one every three innings that you play, you're ahead of the curve. You're operating at a world class level in that level of cricket that you're in. And Sachin Tendulkar scored 33% of his innings in international cricket with 50 or more. And he's the best player statistically that we've seen in modern times. Yet 33% of his innings were 50 or more, and he is heralded as being a god. So also have perspective as well as trust in your training when you go into games.
Yeah, take the pressure off yourself a little bit. Speaking of having coached for a long time, I had reason, Gareth, to this morning actually to dig out my old National Cricket Association Level 1 coaching certificate.
Beautiful.
Which is not looking very well, unfortunately. There's some water damage on it, but it's still legible. The 5th of December 1993.
That's good.
So that made me feel very old, which of course I am, But it made me feel very old. I'll put that back in the certificate folder and not think about it too much again. But yeah, taking the pressure off yourself is there's a couple of little clues in what he said about how he's not able to show his real potential. That, I think that says something about someone who is focusing a little bit on what he thinks he's, you know, is his natural ability and not what his effort is, you know, in terms of, well, look, if I try my hardest and do my level best, then I can't fail no matter how many runs I get because I can only do as much as I can do, if that makes sense. So potential is a word which is a good word to have, but also it's a word that can be dangerous. You can make, well, I didn't get any runs today, you know, because of some external reason, or, you know, you sort of start making excuses or blaming other people, or maybe even blaming yourself for not reaching your potential. But actually, if you say, well, look, if I'm doing everything right and I'm giving myself the best chance of success, then it almost doesn't matter how many runs I get. Well, of course it does, because, you know, if you don't get runs, you can't be seen as a good batsman. But it's almost as if, well, as long as I'm performing to my maximum effort, then that kind of takes the pressure off you a bit to say, well, look, you know, I can't try any harder than I'm trying, so I'll just keep going on that. Keep practicing hard and keep doing as much as I can to improve, and that's what's going to get me to success. And not worrying about some sort of mythical potential level that is impossible to measure and impossible to improve, even if you could measure it. But it happens all the time, doesn't it, Gareth? You get guys who would just look $1 million in the net.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it often comes to trust. And we've got two or three kids at school here who just don't allow themselves to replicate their practice form in the middle. And often it is, you know, you hear those sayings, don't you? At this level, I should be scoring runs every time I bat.
Well, should, yeah.
Yeah, nobody ever has. yeah. So what makes you an anomaly to that rule? And we've got to understand that cricket, and, you know, people that listen to this show, and they'll probably get really bored by me saying this, but cricket is a game of failure. We fail far more times than we succeed, but when we succeed, the best ones are ones that succeed big. So they take that opportunity when it comes along on that given day to go really well. And Don Bradman, you know, statistically is twice as good as virtually every other test player in the history of the game from a statistical viewpoint. And if you look at his Manhattan on Crick Info or any of those other sites that look at the Manhattan skyline of his innings, you'll notice that there's heck of a lot of scores under 10 or under 20 in there, but there's several scores of 300, and that's what the best players do. So don't think that you should be going out there and scoring 100 every game. Don't think you should be influencing every game, because nobody ever has in the game, not even Sir Don Bradman, who was pretty blimmin' useful.
Yeah, he was all right. Yeah, possibly the greatest sportsman of all time, let alone the greatest, well, certainly statistically. You know,
incredible. and I suppose the game has come back to him. I mean, he averaged nearly 100, so famously got out for naught in his last ever innings, which took his average under 100 at the end of his career. And it's only very recently that we've had batters getting averages in their careers over 50. Very recently, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and a test average of 40 was deemed to be world class. And the game has got, I should imagine, with covering, with various other regulation changes and this, that and the other, the game has become quite batting dominant in that test cricket and at that top level of it, of the game. Probably maybe too much so, but, you know, it's only very recently we've had people getting half as good a career results as Don Bradman, and even he didn't succeed every time he went out to the middle. He just did it a little bit more consistently than most, but when he did do it, he did it massively.
One thing that helped me when I was playing more regularly was playing games where there was a little bit less on it. You know, it wasn't a big match. And it was pick up midweek 20 over game or something like that, where, you know, it didn't matter how well you did, but that it got you in the mindset of going, okay, well, you know, I'm just I'm going to try my hardest here to score as many runs as I can. But, you know, whatever happens, happens. And that sort of, that did carry over then. It did relax me a little bit more in the games where it felt like there was more on them. So maybe something like that might help you. It's not really a drill, Akash, but maybe something where you're playing a match, even if it's just, you know, knocking about with your mates in a park or something, you know, something where it doesn't matter that much, and you know you're going to have a good time and you're going to try as hard as you can while you're there, but you know it doesn't mean that your end of your hopes as a career as a cricketer.
We had a really good one the other day on Monday, first day of term. We got all of the cricketers, irrespective of, you know, whether they've played county cricket or whether they're starting for the first time, playing tape ball in the year 9 game session. And it's been fascinating to watch a number of our under 14 players playing games of cricket where they've almost looked sort of like shotless, or you know they haven't been able to hit the ball off a square, and they've looked very tentative and looked almost fearing getting out. And then we played tape ball the other day and they're swinging through the ball beautifully, they're relaxed and all of those things. And I think one of the things that somebody like MS Dhoni has done brilliantly well over his career is that the people that watched him when he was playing tape ball, because he came into the game, I mean, he was a ticket inspector on the railways, you know, when he first got noticed at the age of 23. But when he was playing tape ball cricket at the age of 15, 16 and even younger, the style that he now plays, that we've now become accustomed to and now think is great, is exactly the style that he played within tape ball, exactly the methodology and the approach and the how he swung through a cricket ball. None of that has changed, and he's just learned over time to adapt his mind really, and adapt the way that he approaches his cricket. And you know, as a result, now he's considered to be the best finisher in the game. But even he doesn't do it every single time that situation comes around, and everybody says, "Oh, he's the best finisher in the game." But he does it more often than not because he's got perspective. And you know, for me, he's a bit special. I'm writing about him this week. He's a bit special, but equally he does have his days where he fails as well. So give yourself a bit of a break would be my first thing. Also, trust your training. Trusting your training is so important, and it sounds like you're a really, really good trainer. So well done on that. But now trust it and make it happen when you go out in the middle on a more consistent basis. But don't expect to do it every week.
That is all we've got time for this week. Don't forget that you can get extra Pitch Vision Cricket Show content by going to pitchvision.com and searching for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find the Pitch Vision Academy page there with some extra stuff. The stuff that doesn't make it into the show is put into that account, and you can follow us there and find out. It doesn't cost you anything, so just give us a follow and you'll get the extra stuff if you want to do that. But yeah, we are going now, but before we do that, we're just going to decide on the winner of the competition, this week's competition for the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the questions were Yassif's one about isometric exercises, and Utkarsh's one about showing his real potential in matches. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go for the isometric exercises because it was great to pick up on a couple of past conversations. It's also good to make me have a little look on the, online to see what I was talking about was somewhere near right. So thank you for that. I always like a bit of consultation with various search engines on the internet. So yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah, always good to be challenged, you know, and say, right, okay, well, I'm not 100% sure here, but I can definitely find out. So that's what we want, isn't it? You don't want to be saying the same old thing all the time. Well done to you, Yassif. And Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and wanted to send in their question, get their chance to win the prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. As I've already said, you can get us through Pitch Vision. There's a messaging system there, pitchvision.com. Also, make sure that you follow Pitch Vision Academy there to get even more podcast content from us. You can do it in the old-fashioned social media way as well, which is, of course, Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, or Twitter at pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to the show every week in your favourite podcast catching app, then you can do that very easily too. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, find us, tap on subscribe, away you go. It comes out every Friday. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.